Lip smacking good. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Lip Smacking Good. Well, the motto of this show is, if your lips aren't smacking, it ain't good. Right now, I have Liz on the line with me, and I'm so excited because she talks about food sharing. And this is something brand new to me, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be something brand new to most of you out there. Because most of us go to, like, the grocery store and things like that. And I know my mother and her family farm, but I'm from the city. So I don't know anything about farming or dirt or anything about seeds or anything like that. So I'm excited to have her on so she can help us, people like me, who is naive and just don't know anything about it. Introduce yourself to everybody, Liz.
Oh, hi. my name's Liz McClellan, and I started a website called hyperlocavore.com, and we share yard space and seeds and tools and gardening know-how and stuff like that. And so basically what the site does is set up spaces online for people in neighborhoods to meet each other and hopefully grow food together. So I used to live in New York City for about 10 years, and I wanted to garden, and I could never find garden space because the community garden, I mean, I love the community gardens, but their wait lists were like 2 years, 3 years, 5 years sometimes, you know? And so I wanted to get my hands in some dirt, and wasn't available to me in Brooklyn. And so I started thinking about this site and ended up building it.
And I have a question for those of you like me, because I'm from Charlotte, North Carolina, and I can guarantee you they have them here, but I don't know anything about community gardening or anything like that. I guess because our state is so wide and so big, most people have a lot, like their own yards and things like that, versus, like you say, up north, right, where the space is kind of limited. So could you kind of explain to me what is community gardening?
Right. So, for instance, in New York City, there are plots that are reserved for garden space. And most of those garden spaces have been built over the last 30 years and defended against developers. And it allows people in neighborhoods to have maybe a 3x5 square of dirt to dig in, to, you know, plant whatever they like. Thing is, if you get into gardening, it's 3x5 isn't very much space to do very much. You know, you could grow some herbs there and some tomatoes maybe. So when you get into growing your own food, you realize, you know, it takes up more space, and you guys are really lucky that, you know, you guys have all that space. But even so, if you have a lot of space, it doesn't mean that your back can handle it, or, you know, there's a whole lot of reasons that people like to get help in their garden. So yard sharing is about bringing people together to grow food. So for instance, like if I'm in my 60s and I have a bum knee, but I have a big backyard, I can't really necessarily do all that work, you know? So, sometimes younger people would be interested in helping out in exchange for food or, exchange for what we grow. Right.
Okay.
So that's how we think about it. And like I said, the community gardens, you have to, in most cities they exist, but it takes quite a long time to get a box of your own to plant stuff. And if you start getting into growing a lot of your food, it's not really enough space to do very much. So.
And I think that for me, since I'm down south, like I said, I'm still a city girl, even though I'm down south. It's just one of those days where my mother, she's at the age now where, like you said, she can't do it anymore. She's in her 73, 74. So she can't do it anymore. Right. But I remember her having her own garden and raising her own fruits and vegetables and things like that. Now, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, like, they love it. Like, I come with, like, a bag, a grocery bag, and just fill it up. Like, I don't know the seasons or anything. All I know is she says, bring a bag. I bring a bag. I got tomatoes. I got squash. Right. I got cucumbers. And my father-in-law, he likes to grow peppers.
Oh, nice.
And so he tells me about the peppers, and he was like, well, if it's this color, it's this spicy, and if it's this color, it's not as spicy. So I'm learning that type of thing. And my niece, she's hilarious because she spends a lot of time with her grandparents. So they have her out in the garden all the time. And we had to get, she's older now, so she's not as bad. But when she was smaller, we had to tell her not to pick the tomatoes because, you know, she's 2 or 3. And so they're right at her hand length. So you would turn around and she would have like 3 or 4 little small tomatoes in her hands. And she wouldn't call them tomatoes. She just called them maters. She's like, look, I got maters. I was like, no, you can't do this. You can't eat them like this. So you would have to, and then she would get mad at you for telling her not to pick tomatoes, but she likes them. So it was just like a complex thing over here because she doesn't understand why you're telling her not to pick them, but she likes them.
Well, I have to do the same thing with my mom, who gets out there and eats all the strawberries before I can get to them. So she's fast.
I guess young and old, that doesn't change anything.
No.
And I have a question. How do you deal with people that kind of like me, they see it and they go, ooh, that's a lot of work. Or either they see it and they're like, what can I do to prevent bugs from jumping on me and then I ain't getting attacked by snakes? And, you know, because these are like real fears that like people with green thumbs like me. I actually have a black thumb because everything I grow, I kill. So I would be frightened to do something like that.
Oh, I used to be pretty bad at it myself too, but I learned, and you can learn. Well, let's see. So one thing I like to tell people is, you know, I need to do two things at once. So I don't like to go to the gym because it's just, I feel like I'm wasting my time, right? I don't know why, but I can't get to the gym, but I can get to the garden, right? Because at the garden, I'm growing stuff, and that seems like a useful thing to do, you know, and it's a lot cheaper. And at the end of the day, I have food, so I save money that way. So that's one reason I like to garden. And the other is I you know, I don't know about you, but I'm a little crazy, and I, you know, it's like a moving meditation for me. It's like I just feel a lot better after I spend a few hours pulling weeds. You know, if I'm pissed off or something like that, I go out and yank some weeds instead of punching somebody, and I'm in a good place.
That's
good
therapy.
Yeah, it's good cheap therapy too.
Yes, it's like not only did I get rid of the weeds, I have awesome sprouts out here.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, that's it cuts costs in a bunch of ways, and I just really enjoy it, and I feel better when I do it. But as for the bugs, you know, I've got a few little bug bites, but nothing horrible has ever happened to me. Okay. And I do get that, though. Some people, you know, dirt is really icky, you know, it's not exactly, people don't have the same romantic relationship to farming and gardening that I do, right? Because it is work, right?
It is.
It's work.
It is. And do you wear gloves?
I do wear gloves, but I end up taking them off all the time because I can't get, I don't feel as in control with gloves on as I do with just my hands, right? I do wash my hands like obsessively, you know, because I'm in the dirt all the time. Okay. But it dirt, you know, they've said that dirt has certain microbes in it that actually help your microbiome. So all the what am I trying to say? Gosh, what is the word for it? I'm blanking. All of the bacteria in your gut, you know, all the stuff that helps you digest, is helped by being having a relationship to dirt, because we tend to clean up our world so much so that the little bacteria in our bodies, you know, do not do well, and they're part of our existence and our health too. So so mood and things like that are really attached to your microbiome or the bacteria in your gut. And people who garden or spend a lot of time in dirt tend to have better, more healthy microbiomes, or so I've read. I don't, you know, I'm not a scientist, but that's what the research has been saying lately, which I find really interesting. We're like 80% bacteria or something like that.
You know, yes, I think if people ever realize, no matter how much you scrub or wash your body, there is always something on your skin, and that's hard to get people to understand. They're like, yeah, I was like, I don't care how much soap, disinfectant, I don't care what you put, it's naturally there. Like, it's just on top of your skin doing its own thing. You can't see it, you know, but it's just always there, and it's one of the things you make me think about when you're talking about like microorganisms, Is it true that because most people, like you said, they keep everything so clean and so sanitary around them that these microorganisms have a tendency to make people sick because their bodies were never introduced to them at a young age? Because the thing about children, like some parents panic so much and they want to keep kids in a bubble, that it's some things that children just have to be introduced to, and they're protected from it so much till, you know, and I know it might sound silly, but just something simple as a child playing on the floor or playing in dirt, actually, or in a sandbox, you know, you'll be amazed at the things children pick up and put in their mouth and eat and digest, and you turn your back for 3 seconds, next thing you know, they chew the bug, and you hadn't thought twice, you pick them up and go about your way. But it's just one of those things that's just what children do, and I think that, like you were saying about the microorganisms, because we're kind of shielding so much that I think it might contribute to even some of the food allergies that people have nowadays.
Yeah. I want to pause cause we're cutting out a little bit.
Okay.
You're cutting out. I can hear, but you're cutting out, and I'm not sure how that affects your show, but.
Okay. You're actually coming in really clear on my side, but if you give me 1 second, I will hang up and call you right back, sweetie.
Yeah, let's try this again, okay?
Okay.
It may not work, and it might just be my line. You know, I'm out in the country, so my line is not great. But.
Oh, no problem. So I'm going to hang up and call you right back, sweetie.
Okay, let's
Thank
try
you.
Again.
Uh-oh. Hello?
Hi.
Okay. How do I sound now?
Better.
Okay. Crystal clear. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead, sweetie.
Well, so you were saying about, you know, kids and keeping them clean. Is it possible that we're overcompensating and our kids getting sick because they're too clean? Is that your question?
Yes.
Yeah. So as I said, I'm not a scientist, but there have been studies that have said exactly that thing. So I think there's probably a happy medium between, you know, living in filth, like on Hoarders, which can't be good for, you know, or living in, you know, in connection with the earth that we've been connected to for our entire, evolutionary track. So, you know, I think we've probably overcompensated in one direction. I'll try and post some of those studies on my Twitter feed if you guys want to look at those.
Okay. Do you think that, when you do like the group sharing and things like that, have people got to the point where they don't go to the grocery store or they don't go to the grocery store as much because they basically have a lot of everything that they need?
Yeah, I think it takes quite a lot to get to that point. I mean, we need a lot of land to grow wheat, for instance, and I've got 2 acres and I don't grow wheat, but okay. So, the things that you can really save money on are things like herbs, things, and you know, you can do that on your patio even, you know, tomatoes. And I'm, you know, once you have a homegrown tomato, it's incredibly hard to go back to the things they have in the store. I
yes,
mean, it just
it
tastes like
is.
A
it is the
whole same. New world, right?
Yeah. Because my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, I remember one time they was like, when they first had started doing their garden, they've been doing it for many, many years now. And I remember my father-in-law was like, Karen, try this. I bit into it and it was the sweetest tomato I've ever had in my life. I didn't realize tomatoes have a natural sweetness anyway, because I love tomatoes. So I eat tomatoes like grapes, especially little small ones, but it was the natural sugar was unreal. Yeah. And it was one of those things. Yeah. It was like you eat that and then you go back and you buy that mess at the grocery store and it's like night and day.
It's so sad. Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, and then we wonder why kids don't eat vegetables. Well, they're not really eating vegetables. You know, a lot of the time they're eating something that looks like a vegetable, but
yes,
you know,
something
doesn't
that's
taste
been
anything
sliced.
Like a vegetable.
Yeah. Something has been sliced and diced and somebody has set in the lab and crossed the crumble zones and made a brand new item that nobody ever heard of before and sprayed it with pesticides and things like that. And I think we've just become so accustomed to that. And I guess my thing is that, what would you say to the people that would like to grow, like maybe not as big as like the group sharing, but want to do something at home and they have very little space, but they want to do something just for the...
Well,
go ahead.
Right. So I would say there's a bunch of herbs that are really, really expensive in the store and really cheap to grow. So I would look at, you know, your cilantro and parsley and a rosemary maybe in a pot.
Okay.
And garlic is cheap. So I try to look at things that are not cheap. A super sweet 100 on your balcony would be a bunch of cherry tomatoes that just go and go and go all summer.
Okay.
And you need maybe a medium-sized pot for that. Peppers I've had are a little harder. Maybe jalapenos would be fine, but the bigger ones are harder. I live in eastern Oregon now, so I have a really short growing season.
Okay.
So I can't do peppers. It's so sad I can't do peppers. So let's see. Cucumbers are a little hard to do in a small space.
Okay.
So I would definitely stick with herbs and tomatoes and maybe small peppers. Like you could do the really hot, hot small peppers. What's the name of them? It starts with C. Anyway, but you know, any of the smaller, real hot peppers, you can do those on your balcony if you live in a place that you have a long enough season.
Yeah. When it comes to peppers, like jalapenos, that's about my knowledge of peppers.
Uh huh. Do you like them?
Yes, I do. Jalapenos, banana peppers.
Mm-hmm. They're not too hard. I grow I used to live in New Mexico, so I love my green peppers,
okay.
The real long green peppers, the hatch chilies.
Uh-huh.
And I can grow those here. They seem to do okay with a shorter season. So I would start with those plants, especially. And some plants are perennials, and you want to bring them in the winter. So if you have a rosemary, you want to bring that in. And if you have a winter, you want to bring that in. And I guess even in the South, you have winter now.
Yes.
Things are getting pretty weird, huh?
Everywhere, yes. Yes. Right now is really beautiful and pretty around here, but this winter has been, this winter just passed, is one of the harshest winters we down South have had in a very long time.
Did you guys get snow?
Yes, which nobody was happy with. We actually shut down, which I think that because up north in certain other areas of the country, it snows more frequently, and a lot of people don't understand that certain areas are designed better for cold weather. And they salt the roads, you know, everybody lives in tight quarters. Down here, everybody's more spread out. It's a wider area. It's like, yeah, the main roads might be clear, but you can't get out your house, you know, or you can't walk down the steps. Like it's not the same. And we don't have like the trains and the subway.
You probably don't even have a snow shovel.
I don't.
Do you even have a snow shovel?
I know. I don't own one. Like, it's like, it's no reason to, as weird as that may sound, there's no reason to own one down here.
No, I felt bad for all you guys. I was like, oh man, that can't be easy.
No, the most you get at me is some de-icer that I spray on my windshield when it gets frost. It's like, outside of that, why do I need it?
Right.
As weird as that may sound. So yeah, this winter has been harsh. And I think that, is it true, like when they talk about like the frost, does the frost affect like the things that you grow in your garden if it comes too soon?
Yeah. So we've got, so flowering trees like plum and apple and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's, so let's see, our last frost day is May 31st.
Okay.
Which means we could get snow right up until May 31st, and we've had snow in June up here.
Are you serious?
I mean, yeah. Well, I live in the mountains, so I've got mountains of eastern Oregon. So we're in a tiny mountain valley that's been called Little Switzerland. It's that cold, you know.
Wow.
So our season's real short, but so right now everybody's holding their breath because our plums are blossoming. Our plums are blossoming, and it snowed this morning. So we're just all. We're just terrified, you know, because we're going to lose all our plums if it gets too cold. So, but I don't think you guys generally have that problem where you guys are, but each place has each area has a zone. And if you go to the USDA and look for the hardiness zone, they can tell you what zone you're in. And then when you look at, say, if you look a little packet of seed, it will tell you what zone it goes down to. So, Right. So we're in zone 6A, which means we have this really short season and it could snow anytime up until, you know, June. And so I look at every seed packet, and if it tells me I can't do zone 6, I don't even buy it. So that's the first thing to know.
Okay, so that will be very, very helpful. So, guys, please go check it out if this is something that you want to get into, because I didn't know anything about zones. The only thing I knew was that my mother-in-law and father-in-law said we do between this season and this season. But it's more of just knowing the area, not really knowing the zones per se. They go, okay, we can only grow this between this season and this season, or this between this season and this season. Oh,
right.
Wow.
Exactly. The other thing to do is to go find a gardener in your neighborhood who's been doing it for as long as your parents-in-law have, you know, because that's where all the knowledge is. You know, they know what grows where they live. And so, the other thing I like about this yard sharing idea is it really, lets the elders flourish. You know, the people that have done this all their lives, they get to teach and they get to be asked what works and what doesn't. And that, you know, that makes people happy. I'm 50. If you ask me something, you ask me for my advice about something, I kind of like that, you know, wow. So it's like find the older gardeners in your area and just talk them up, you know?
Yes. Just watching my mother, and like I say, we're kind of the opposite, because I'm like, ooh, outside, bugs, mosquitoes, no. And I think because it gets so hot down here, too, a lot of that just turned me. I was like, oh, I don't want to be outside in the heat. It's like, why?
Yeah. Well, I have the same problem here. It can be like 100 here, easy. And so my garden time is morning and evening, and I try, you know, during the hot season, I try to do it. I try to water really early. And I try to, do my weeding and stuff in the late afternoon when it's getting a little cooler. There's no reason to be out in the sun like that. It's not even good for you to be out when it's so hot. So you have to work around those hours if you can, you know, sometimes it's not possible, but.
And where, I know that you have people all over the country that have signed up for the food sharing. Are you in every state now?
Well, you can, let's put it this way. You can start anywhere you are. So we have about 200, maybe 300, local groups now.
Okay.
But it just takes one person to start a group up. So wherever you are, you can start one and, just mail out to your friends and people that might be interested in doing it with you, or your neighbors, and see what you get. But we don't formally set anything up for you, but we can help you, with flyers and posters and stuff like that, and help you get going.
But like mm-hmm. when I was talking about before about me and what they call them, black thumbs, when you can't grow, this shows you how much I don't know anything about plants. My mother-in-law, she gave me some, I think some, not annuals, I forgot the name of the plants, but it's a plant that it grows every year. It dies down and then it pops back up.
Okay, that's a perennial.
That's what it is, a perennial. It dies down, and then it pop. No matter what you do to it, it dies down and it pops back up. And she told me, she said, if you kill these, Karen, I don't know what to tell you. She said, I will give up on you. She said, because no matter how bad you treat them, they're going to come back. And I think I tried my best to kill them, because I don't know anything about weeds. So I went outside spraying Miracle-Gro and didn't realize I was feeding the weeds. I did not know this. I don't know what the heck a weed is. I wouldn't know a weed if it smacked me upside the face.
Right.
And so...
It's a learning process for sure. I mean, I used to try and keep houseplants and I couldn't do that. I don't know why me and houseplants do it. I actually have, I'm looking in my window right now and I have some plastic flowers on my window.
You know what? Yes.
Houseplants and me don't get along.
I'm that girl too. I am plastic flower girl all the way. I will dust you off and keep on going.
Yeah, there you go. You know, or just take them in the shower and, you know.
Yes. And
but
spray
I
them
seem
down.
To do, I seem to do better with outdoor plants and for instance, you need to get to know them. Like a rosemary doesn't like a lot of water, you know, and if you give it too much water, you'll kill it. But if you don't give it enough water, you'll also kill it. So it's kind of, you have to get to know each one. Just like a person, you know, they all have, everyone's kind of specific and, you know, one person likes this and the other person really doesn't like that at all. And, you know, so it's a bit weird. plants are not people, I know, but
I understand what you said, like the different personalities, because like what you do to rosemary, you might not can do to cilantro. What you do to cilantro, right. You might not can do to oregano. What you do to oregano, you might not can do to greens, you know, so it just kind of varies depending on what it is. What would be a starter tool set for somebody? Like if you go, this is what I want to do, but I don't own a hoe, I don't own a weed eater, I don't even own a lawnmower. Like, where do I start?
Right. Well, I would suggest starting really basic. You just need a little trowel, which is a little hand shovel. You need maybe just that. Maybe a bigger shovel, depending on how large your plot is, right?
Okay. Yes.
Big shovel, small shovel. What are those little three-prong claw hooks?
Yes, I call it a little hand rake.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't know what to call them, but
that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. Around gardening season, at the end of gardening season, you know, go to Target or whatever, and they have little kits, you know, and you can probably get a whole kit for maybe $11.
Okay.
You know, it's just going to have all the little hand tools you'll need. Do get some of those rubberized gloves. They're, you know, just if you're scared about bugs, they're going to protect you.
Okay.
I've only been bitten once in maybe 6 years of gardening. And the ones I would watch out for are the centipedes. Those guys really hurt, and they're scary. I have nightmares about centipedes. That's the one in Willy Wonka, in the old Willy Wonka movie.
Yes.
That had all the legs.
Yes.
Freaks me out still. And they hurt. They really hurt. But maybe pincher bugs, they kind of hurt. But nothing's going to kill you. Unless, you know, maybe a brown recluse spider bite, but I don't even think you have those. I don't know. But anyway, get to know your spiders, but don't worry about them. Most of the spiders in your garden are actually really good for your garden. They're going to eat all the bugs that eat your crops, right?
Okay. Yeah. And get them off. What was it that sparked something in you that says that this is what I want to do? I know you're talking about living up north and, you know, being on the list, but what is it that made you even want to start it? Like, is there something that happened, or did you change your eating habits or become a vegetarian? Like, what was it that sparked this?
Well, I've always liked gardening, and I grew up in California, and my dad and I used to go up and down the coast to all the fruit stands in the valley on the way down to San Francisco or way down to LA, and I just have a thing about fresh food. I'm used to it. I'm used to good food. And, you know, when I was living in Brooklyn, I was living out in Prospect Place, and it's changed a little, but when I was there, the bodegas didn't have a whole lot of fresh food.
Okay.
And, you know, it was just hard to get. It was a bit of a food desert, and I had to walk a little farther to get, you know, to the stores that had good food. And that just got me interested in what the barriers are between a person and eating well, you know, and those barriers are huge. I mean, some of us are working two and three jobs, you know, so growing your own is maybe not going to be added to that list of things to do, you know.
Okay.
And it just got me interested in food politics and how we are kept from doing the best for ourselves and how hard it is to eat well. And, you know, got me thinking about it.
Do you think that we were talking about cost before? Do you think that cost has a lot to do with why people opt not to do their gardening, like the food sharing thing, because they keep thinking, well, I have to buy this, I have to buy this, I'll be cheap. It's cheaper for me just to go to the grocery store. When in reality, because most of everything we eat is grown from the ground anyway, but just doing it yourself and just that feeling of accomplishment. You can't explain or express that to somebody.
Definitely. I mean, the feeling of eating a plateful of food you grew yourself really does feel like I have some capacity for self care. You know, that's really good, and it feels good to take care of yourself. You know, it feels good to have that productive connection to the ground. You know. And like I said, I may romanticize this more than people who are, you know, maybe a generation or two from being on a farm, right? Because we haven't been on a farm for a very long time. So I know that it's real work. And, you know, now I've got maybe 10 raised boxes. And it can be a lot of work just to keep those raised boxes going, right?
Yeah.
So it's a mix, you know, it's like part of it is really good for me, but I don't want to overemphasize and be totally romantic about it. The idea around food sharing or produce sharing is that, you know, if you get your neighborhood together and you have, you know, some guy down here that has a lemon tree and some guy over here that has a peach tree and you've got greens and someone else grows garlic, you could probably get together and make all of that cheaper for yourselves, you know? So mainly the part of this came about in 2002 when the economy was collapsing, and I was sort of like, well, how are we going to take care of ourselves? You know, it may be that the bodega ends up being empty in a few weeks, you know?
Yeah.
So I was trying to think about, you know, what do we do instead? And if you look at places like Cuba or when they had the crash and the Soviet Union went down, Cuba started taking care of itself and with its own food, but they did it by growing stuff, and they did it by growing their own, and they built large community gardens, and people just in a crisis, people do take care of themselves. So I think for me, I just want to build the infrastructure that allows us to take care of ourselves should bad things happen, you know?
Do you find out that once people make these changes, and doing this would actually naturally change people's eating habits because they're growing fresh things around and things like that? Do you find out that a lot of these people give you feedback about how their health have changed? Maybe their cholesterol dropped, or maybe they don't have to take blood pressure pills, or, you know, maybe they have more energy now. Do people tell you about the physical healthy changes that happen to them as they begin to make these changes?
Yeah, well, I can talk about my experience, has been going from being like really uptight city person to getting much more movement in my life and much more, you know, better food, and just the downtime or the like I've said, the moving meditation of gardening has meant that I'm just a lot less of a stress monkey than I was. So I think the connection between health and gardening is really, really direct. And I don't want to speak for other people. You know, people garden for their own reasons. So I'll talk about my experience.
No problem.
So personally, I've feel 10 times better. I feel younger at 50 than I did at 35, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, which is, and you know, it's an internal thing. I look a little older, but I feel a lot better.
You know? Do you feel like your energy level has gone up?
Oh, for sure. And you know, I should say I'm not a perfect eater. I'm not all organic. I'm not, I mean, I try, but you know, I eat meat. I eat American cheese and bacon on my veggie burgers. I mean, I'm confused.
I do too. So don't feel bad.
Right. You know, and I like stuff that's not good for me because, you know, life is short, and you know, if there's no chocolate milkshakes in it, then I'm not sure I want to live, right?
So me either. But, I agree.
Right? So for me, the movement and eating more greens and eating food I grow, and just the time out that gardening is, you know, it takes a lot of, so for instance, I have a compost pile that I have to turn every couple of days, and it's a workout, and that's a workout I never would have gotten, you know, in my old life, you know? And so, it's just, it's movement. But like I said, for me, it's movement that is in the aim of doing something else. So it doesn't feel like I'm going to the gym and just racking my hours, you know?
Do you, and can you tell by just the changing in your eating habits, how your digestive system responds differently? Like, is response like better over time?
So I don't grow yogurt, but okay. Since I introduced some yogurt into my life, my body has gotten a lot happier. Like I find in particular that, like that Greek yogurt stuff, it's very weirdly energizing for me. Like I'll eat my Greek I can't say it. I'll eat my Greek yogurt for breakfast, and I feel much better. It's like a mood thing too. Like, I don't know if it's directly related, but I suspect that yogurt has something to do with me feeling a lot better than I used to.
Yeah.
Mood wise.
I started, eating Greek yogurt too. And yogurt has, I think my doctor said, a type of enzyme in it, like she said, live cultures or something like that, that's actually really, really good for your body. And mm-hmm. it took me a long time to get to yogurt because when she said yogurt, I was like, can I eat it frozen? And she said, no, she said, because everything freezes, including the live stuff that I want you to digest right. in your body. I can't read crap because that's more like ice cream to me. But once right. I changed over to Greek yogurt, I really can say I like it. I like the strawberries, like, cause you know, you put fruits and things in it, and, it's a little thicker than like the regular yogurt. But I really, so I do agree with you as far as like the energy level, because like you said, you start your day off with that and it's just a smooth sailing.
And it's got really, it's got high protein too. So I eat it two ways. The first way is with, honey and walnuts, and just for breakfast. And then the other way and granola. And the other way I eat it is, just a lot of little cherry tomatoes and some green onions and dill. And olive oil and Greek olives or capers or something like that with that real tangy, vinegary taste. And so that's more like a lunch. And I love that. That's one of my favorite meals.
That sounds delicious.
It's pretty good. It's also one of my favorite potluck things. I just bring it over because it's super easy and I don't have to think about it. But bring that and some pita bread and you're good to go.
Ooh, and I just recently found hummus. And I know this might sound silly, but hummus just got introduced into my life not too long ago, and I didn't know what the heck hummus was. All I knew was that it was delicious. And I found out it was chickpeas, and I had to go look up what the heck a chickpea was. But once I found out that it was ground chickpeas, I was like, this is everything to me.
It's also really good with white beans or cannelli beans. I make it that way. Mm. Just get cannelli or cannelloni. No, cannelloni is the dessert. What? Cannelli beans, I think. Navy beans? One of those.
Okay.
Super tasty. Super tasty. Mm. And I'll just make like a burrito wrap with that in my veg. You know, so some hummus and a burrito wrap and some veggie in there, and that's a good lunch.
That sounds delicious. Speaking of potluck, what is the most interesting thing somebody has bought to a potluck?
Oh, I don't know. So I live in this little town now. It's like less than 300 people and 8 churches. And so we do potlucks, right? And let's see, what's the most interesting thing? Oh, I know. So my friend Betsy May came, we had an Easter potluck, and she brought, and I thought this sounded crazy. I thought this was the craziest thing I'd heard. She brought a salmon cheesecake.
Wow.
So imagine like a cheesecake, but with like more savory, with lots of salmon and herbs in it. And it was incredible. I don't know. It needed salad, but it was so tasty. And basically it's like a bagel and lox, just rearranged, right?
Wow. And I'm going to ask you a question. Me and my husband just went to this place called Taste of Dilworth. And they had lox on the menu, and I looked at him, and I said, what the heck is a lox? So I'm going to ask you, what is a lox?
So lox is like it's a smoked salmon, basically. Okay. And so if you go to a deli in New York City, you can ask for lox, and it's basically just a smoked salmon. They also have it in Sweden, and it's called gravlax there, so gravlax, gravlax.
Okay.
And it's pretty tasty. Oh, wow. If you like fish.
Okay. And
it's super good for you too. It's got the omega fatty acids in it.
Ooh, so is it a certain piece of the salmon? Because I've had salmon steaks. I've had salmon fillets. Like, is this a piece of, like, when you chop it up, you go, here's the lox?
So I'm not sure which part of the salmon is it, but it's a thin slice of salmon, that's been basically cured, and dried out. So it's really smoked and it's a little more salmony than a fresh piece of salmon, you know.
Okay.
It's like beef jerky, only it's salmon.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's not that tough though. It's kind of soft.
Because it's thin. It's thin, right? From your description.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's real thin, and you put it. So in New York, you'll put it on like a bagel with cream cheese and lox and like a nice fat pink yellow onion, not yellow onion, and purple onion.
A lot of people use dill with it too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah,
because
definitely.
Most of the time,
dill and mustard.
Yes, most of the time when I see it on the menu, it comes with like dill and all this other stuff. And I'm adventurous, but I was like, do I need to Google this? Because I was like, I had, because it's spelled LOX. So I'm like, What the heck is this? Like, there's no description beside it, so I'm just supposed to know what a lox is.
Right, right. So it's spelled L-O-X here and L-A-X in Sweden, so if you see it that way. There's a really nice sauce you can make for it called just a dill and mustard sauce.
Mm-hmm.
That's super tasty. I love that. Very, very delicious. I live out in the mountains now, so I'm far away from the sea. And so I grew up, you know, in the Bay Area. I'm used to having a lot of fish around. We don't get any fish up here. We get trout. That's it. Trout and maybe some salmon, but not the ocean salmon. I guess it is ocean.
And it's nothing like it. I'm not even gonna lie. What is the nastiest thing that you ever had at a potluck? Well, you taste it and you go, no, this is not it. No, thank you.
It's funny. I can't think of anything offhand. And since the town is so small, if I name it, I'm a little worried that it'll get back to the person who made it. So I can't think of anything, actually.
No problem.
You know, we know everybody here, you know. It's like if I put down someone's potluck, I'm just afraid of what will happen. You know?
Because the community is so small.
It's so small, you know. You just keep things like that to yourself.
It's no problem. And when you talk about the gardening space, do people make their own wine?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, we do have some winemakers here in the valley. I haven't done it. We make cider and we make beer too. Mm-hmm. So we've got a lot of people who do their homemade beer and their home cider. I've done cider. We've got apple trees everywhere here. This is a real apple country. And so, I have a friend down the road who collects the apples and makes cider, and then I get some cider, which is kind of nice. The thing about apples here is it's like, do you know there are like 2,000 varieties of apples?
No.
So, there's so many kinds of apples. And so, it's the same thing as that store-bought tomato. You know, I didn't like apples until I came here, and we've got this apple tree in the yard that they're the most tasty, delicious apples in the world. I think it's amazing. And so now I like apples, but I didn't like them before because you just have those red, delicious ones in the store that just don't taste like much, you know?
No, they don't. And they're hard and I can't explain it. They're very bland, like just the regular, like
right.
I prefer the green Granny Smiths because they're smaller. They're easy to chop and eat. I've heard of the big reds. I heard of the Grannies. I heard of the Fujis. Mm-hmm. And that's about as much as my apple, you know, knowledge goes. I'm pretty sure it's like, you know, you go in the grocery stores, all of them, but I kind of put them all in those categories, which is probably not fair to the apple, but I just don't know any better.
So Fuji's are really good, and the other one that it blows my mind is a Honeycrisp. So if you see a Honeycrisp apple in a store, buy it and try that. It's incredibly juicy and sweet.
I had somebody was talking about that before, and they were saying how Honeycrisp is a very, very good apple. And like you say, it's one of those things where they splice them and like twine them together and be like, here's a new version of an apple. And so, next time I do the Honeycrisp, I'm gonna try that. And I had some, it's an apple beer called Angry Orchard.
That sounds good.
And I've never had it till the other day, and there was nothing angry about that beer at all. It was
absolutely happy, huh?
It was absolutely delicious. I was like, why are you, why do they call you angry? Because I'm not angry.
Or I'm a lot less angry now.
Yes, a lot less angry than before I started. Do you, yes, which this is a good thing. Do you have anybody to make cheese in your garden space? Like,
You know, there are probably people in the valley that make it on their own. It's a complex process. When I first moved here, I thought, I know, maybe I'll become a cheesemaker, right? Because I'm into all the real food stuff.
It's a slow and then I process. Looked up,
it's a process. It's also, they need to be milked like really early in the morning, and I'm a night owl, so that was kind of out of the running, you know. Unless they wanted to be, you know, milked at 3 a.m., maybe I could handle that. But it sounded like a lot of work, and it sounded like more work than I wanted to do. So I sort of said, okay, I'm going to stick to the internet thing. I'm going to keep doing my little web pages and be my little nerd self, you know.
Yes.
But ideally, you know, we'd have more cheesemakers here, and we'd have a lot more local food. You know, we're trying to get people to think in terms of local food, because you know this is a poor rural community, so it's like how do people make a living and how do they stay alive, and I think the more we localize our growing and making stuff like that, the better off we'll be. But it's old ways die hard, and people are used to having really large, at this point, really large food systems. Like so we have a lot of beef here, mm-hmm. and all of those people send their cattle to one processing plant. So it's very hard to get people to think in terms of we don't have a big enough butcher here to handle meat for the whole valley. So it's this larger problem of people who have the capacity to grow stuff, but the systems that are already built in from the last 30 years of consolidating the corporate food system don't even allow farmers to do their own food in a lot of cases, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot
of times really messed up.
They will actually pay people to actually change their whole farm over to something else, which mm-hmm. actually may yeah. not benefit the community, but uh-huh. it benefits that. And it's one of those things where you're making me think about the gardening community and like the potluck and things like that. And I think when you're talking about localized, like that's how it used to be when
right.
people would localize things. And you need some of the structures that we have for food, but I mm-hmm. do think when there's no competition, that's becomes the problem. Mm-hmm. Like you say, mm-hmm. you got mm-hmm. everybody sending it to one place versus before you may have had five or six different places that people sent
right.
things to. And sometimes I think that can be the reason why certain things are so high, because you know, mm-hmm. yeah, we can jack the price up, you know, 25 cents a pound, because who's going to stop us? We don't have
right,
a competitor
exactly.
going, well, we'll drop it the price that you're raising it.
Right.
I think competition is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think I like the whole concept behind the food garden things. So for those of you out there that are listening and you want to get started, please do go find out more about this, because it's something where I'm listening. I understand, because I go to the store and there's nothing worse than you going in there and you looking at the price of the rosemary and the price of the cilantro mm-hmm. or, you know, the price of the oregano. You're going, oh my gosh, why is this stuff so high? When mm-hmm. listening to you, I would probably be better off, especially if you cook with it a lot, because I try to stay away from just salt. I've gotten mm-hmm. to the point where I use like kosher salt, so that I don't have to use as mm-hmm. much salt, or sea salt, mm-hmm. so I don't have to use as much salt. So, like I said, I'm not 100% healthy, but I've mm-hmm. kind of pushed myself in that better yeah. eating direction.
You're like me. You like your fat and salt. I do too. You know, yeah. I'm not so much a sugar fiend, but I am a salt and fat fiend.
And see for me, I like salt and fat, but for me, I think my sweetness is sugar. So for me, mm-hmm. I have to do things that feels that sugar craving that I have. So like mm-hmm. I say, I will do green grapes. I will do the Granny Smith apples. I will do right. something to kind of trick myself into saying, yeah, I got sugar, because you know, if I don't, it's a whole nother thing in itself. Out of all the things, because I know you were up north and you were in California and now you're in Oregon, out of all the places that you've been, what is the most unique thing that you've eaten, just period, just out of your whole eating experience?
Oh, you've cut out a little bit. What's the most unique thing I've ever eaten?
Yes.
Oh, well, I'll say the most challenging, weird thing I've ever eaten is uni, like sushi, which is a certain type of sea urchin that is popular. It's supposed to be a delicacy, but I could not handle it. And I'm pretty good at trying everything, but I could not handle uni. So that's my thing. That's the thing I can't. But I love sushi in general.
Uni, is there a particular type of fish?
It's a sea urchin. And so, I mean, I don't want to insult anybody, but to me it feels like eating someone else's snot. It's just like too slimy.
She was like, nope, can't do
no.
this. How was it served to you?
It was like a sushi thing. It had so the wrap of the seaweed around it went a little higher to keep the gooey stuff inside the
okay.
little bowl made by the and natto. I don't like fermented soybean. It's also Japanese, but you know, I like most other kinds of sushi, so I don't want to
Okay.
I don't want to discourage people from going to get sushi, but those, I tried them and I did not like them.
No problem. I'm a sushi fan, so I was like, well, that's what I was wondering. Was it sashimi style? Like that's what I was wondering. How it was like for me? I'm a sushi fan. It took my husband a very, very long time to convince me to eat sushi because we fish out here. So I'm like, I'm not eating no sushi. I'm not eating that stuff. We go out and we, you know, get at the lake, you know, because you have to scale that and cook that and fry that. And then I had to understand that it's not that type of fish. It's farm raised, it's controlled, and that kind of changed my mind a little bit there. So for those of you, when she's talking about sushi, I know for me personally, when I first started, I started with vegetables, you know, and crab and chicken,
cucumber,
shrimp
is good too.
Shrimp is good too, and also I've learned too, and I tell people, you can actually tell them to cook your fish and then make it roll. I don't think a lot of people just automatically assume that it has to be raw. It doesn't. But for me, I'm like you. I am a sushi person. What, because of the time of the year, what food festivals are you looking forward to?
Oh, you know, I am so far away from everything here. It's 3 hours to Boise, and that's Baker City is an hour away. So I don't travel a lot. It's just too much driving for me. But, you know, there are food festivals all over the country to go to. I miss them. I can't get to them, but I miss them. I miss sushi. We can't get sushi here, you know?
That's right.
It's like there's no...
You almost landlocked.
Sorry?
You're like landlocked, where it's like nothing but land.
I am landlocked, yes. So I don't get out to festivals very much. I know there are lots of great ones around town. How about you guys? Do you have one there?
Oh, yes. We have the Taste of Charlotte that comes here, which is actually really, really nice. We have the Barbecue Blues one that comes here.
Oh, cool.
We have several fests because it's getting... Go ahead.
I was going to say there's an apple pressing party in Joseph, which is an hour away. That's another little town. So that occasionally we do that. And so people, it's sort of a community cider press, you know, so everybody brings their apples and there are three or four cider presses and you can go crush your apples and get ready for your cider. So we do that sometimes.
Now that sounds fun.
It is super fun. There are bands and stuff like that. And it's a big potluck. And I mean, a huge potluck. I mean, these potluck tables here, they're like 25 feet long, you know, because people take their potlucks seriously.
Wow. And with the potluck, how do you determine a designate, like a area? Do you go, well, let's have it at the local park and everybody bring their food? Or somebody says, well, I'm having it at my house. Everybody comes here. Like, how do you?
Yeah, it depends. Okay. People just throw them and people show up. You know, you put it in the paper and people show up. Sometimes they're in the park. Sometimes they're at people's houses. Sometimes, those are the only two options, really.
What is the most amount of people that you've seen or you can estimate that you've seen at a potluck before?
Oh, probably that cider press thing. That was at least, 500 people, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a real community event. You know, people take their cider seriously out here.
It sounds like it. Yeah, especially since you said they have a lot of different apples and things like that up there. That right there sounds fun.
Yeah, super fun. So it's in Joseph, Oregon. I don't know what dates, but probably in the fall sometime. So if anybody's ever coming through.
Yeah, guys, if you're out there in that area, because we have people all over, please go check it out because that sounds like a lot of fun. What is your favorite thing to eat that you don't make?
That I make?
That you don't make.
That I don't make. Well, it would have to be like Thai food or Vietnamese food. So I grew up in the Bay Area, and I'm used to eating a lot of different varieties of Asian food. I lived in the Richmond, which is mostly Chinese, but there's a lot of Thai people there too and stuff. So I'm used to eating a lot of Asian food in my diet. When I lived in New York, I did that too. And I can get some of the ingredients out here, but not all of them. And I'm a noob at it. So I'm not very good at cooking Vietnamese food or Thai food. So I miss it a lot and I try, but it never comes out exactly like it should.
Yeah, don't feel bad. Me either. I just recently got a wok. And
oh, cool.
it's interesting with a wok, because it's not like a standard pan, and it gets hot. It is cut really thin, and you kind of it's like a trial and error. So I burnt things, and you know, because I just didn't know. And you need a special type of oil, like you need like oil that's designed for the high impact of the heat.
And right, so, exactly. So, and sesame oil is super expensive here. Like you can get a bottle, but it's a little tiny one, and it's about $10.
Oh my!
And I'm used to it's crazy. I'm used to buying it in an Asian market by the gallon for three. You know, so
wow. I bet you the so internet will probably be the cheapest place to get it.
Yeah, definitely. Do you guys have a lot of Asian markets there, or a community that's strong enough to bring that stuff in?
Yes, over the years, the community has grown as far as like the we have a large diversity in Charlotte, because I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, like never before. So
right.
So they actually have like actually Asian slash Korean stores, and so you go in there and. Things that like at the regular grocery store, it's like $5 or $6. You can find it in there, two or three. And the same thing here with a lot of the Hispanic and Mexican stores. Like who is it? Goya. I want to say Goya is like a name brand. Goya in the store is high. You turn around and you go to a Mexican or Hispanic grocery store. Not only will you find the Goya there for half the price, you will find. Different versions of Goya that you didn't even know existed, because it's like for some reason in the American type store they kind of have a small little section, but when you go there you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize we had 25 different spices or so it's fun to play with the different things that they have there, and so we're starting to branch out into other different spices and types of foods and sauces that I never heard before. Like, I recently found a barbecue Korean sauce, and it is out of this world. I would have never found. I think we ended up finding it in like a specialty store or a specialty area or something like that. So, for those of you that go grocery shopping, whenever you want like anything international, go to like the international aisle in your grocery store, because like especially for Hispanic food, like when you go, you get salsa and Taco Bell shells. That's not Hispanic food. Like you live I looked over there and I was like, this can't be it. But if you go to like the international section, you will find the. I think a lot of times, especially with the shell, the hard shells, it's like 10 hard shells for like $1 a pop. You go over there, you find 10 hard shells for like $3.50. Like, it's a huge difference in the price. It might not be like quote unquote name brand, but to me, it served the same purpose. So I agree with what you were saying about, kind of branching out and trying these new things. Like you say, it's a fraction of the price.
Yeah, we're lucky enough to have a Middle Eastern store in Portland, and if I go to Portland, Oregon, I'll always stop in there too, because the same thing, you know, you can buy your spices much cheaper. So a giant bag of black pepper will cost me $3 as opposed to, you know, it just even the basics, you know. So it's if you have a chance, find one of those, stop in and stock up.
I'm pretty sure we have one here. I do not know where, but I will take my little fanny out there and find it.
Yeah. Delicious stuff.
It sounds delicious. What is your favorite food that you stash from others? And you go, this is mine, I'm not sharing.
Let's see. So craft beer probably doesn't count. let's see. You know, I buy... it's funny, no one likes it, so I don't have to hide it, but I like that Marmite. I like that Marmite stuff from Australia. It's really weird. It's a little jar of it's brewer's yeast called Marmite or Vegemite, and it's a real strong taste, and I usually just have it on bread with cream cheese for breakfast sometimes, but like I don't have to fight over it because no one likes it. But
well, that's a good thing about certain foods, and I'm not even gonna lie, and I know my husband will probably go back and listen to this. There are some things that I love that I know he doesn't like that I purposely go by that way I know I can enjoy it in peace.
Right, exactly.
I say good. Exactly. I don't have to share.
Right, it's all mine.
All mine. what is your favorite thing to eat that you do make this time?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I like Swedish meatballs. So Ooh. It's a recipe with egg noodles. And I lived in Sweden for a little while. So I like, it reminds me of my trip there. And it's kind of a, it's a creamy meatball recipe and it has some nutmeg in it. It tastes really different, but it's pretty delicious. And I'll post a recipe for that on my Twitter too. Let's see. I'll write that down.
Oh my. That sounds delicious. Go ahead.
It's a good winter, like, comfort food.
Yes.
You know, kind of thing.
Yes. You eat it and you just stay in the warm air. What are some of the differences, since you live in Sweden, that you can tell between the way Swedish people eat and the way Americans eat?
Oh, gosh. Well, let's see. They're really fond of, like, an open-faced sandwich. So, and they eat them all the time. So it's just maybe a piece of rye bread or wheat bread with a little ham on it and a little diced egg and maybe a little mayonnaise. I don't know. Okay. It's real basic. Maybe a little dill on top of that. Hmm. But yeah, the open-faced sandwich is something they're really fond of. Probably a lot more of those lox, a lot more of smoked fish. Okay. It's a big part of it. A lot of potatoes, a ton of they have really nice buttery yellow potatoes that they eat a lot, which are pretty tasty. The other thing I like to grow is I grow some fingerling potatoes. They're called Lorette potatoes.
Those are the ones that look like fingers, right? That's how I remember that from Food Network. I was like, oh yeah, they look like fingers.
Yes, exactly. And they again, you know, when you grow your own stuff, the flavors are so much deeper and more interesting. So these potatoes are sort of nutty flavored. And I learned to like those when I was in Sweden. So that's the connection there. I don't know. Can you grow potatoes in the South? I guess you can grow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sweet potatoes, regular potatoes, red potatoes.
I just discovered the sweet potato. I always got them confused with yams like everybody else. But then the white sweet potato, I had never had one of those. And I started getting them a few months ago, and now I can't get enough of them. I love them with butter and garlic. And yum, yum, yum.
And yes, and my mother, she's the main person that told me the difference, because I was like, what the heck is the difference? And I think my biggest issue is that I used to always get a pumpkin pie and a sweet potato pie mixed together because they both orange.
Uh-huh, right.
And my mother told me, she was like, the sweet potato has a darker orange than a pumpkin.
Right, right.
And just because when you just look at it, because I'm not a fan of pumpkin, so I would get angry because my mouth would be tuned up for sweet potato and I bite into it and it's pumpkin, then I'm mad. Because I was like, I did not expect pumpkin. I expected sweet potato. So she helped me with that conundrum that I'll have in my life every Thanksgiving. And when you were talking about sweet potato, let me tell you what I've just learned. Have you ever, well, there's something called, and I didn't learn this too. It's this place not too far from us called Jocks and Jill's. And on the menu, very few places have it, which I'm amazed since we're down south, have sweet potatoes on their menu, period. But if they do, a lot of times they're not good at it. But they have sweet potato tater tots.
Oh.
And when I tell you, those things are delicious. And then they have the nerves to turn around and give you this little small thing of cinnamon. And you take your, tater tots and you roll them in the cinnamon and you eat them. Oh my good. My mind was blown. Yep. It is the best thing ever.
That sounds really, really good.
It is. I don't even know how to make tots, but one day I'm going to find out how to make tots. And I was like, sweet potato comes in tots? She was like, yes. And also, something else, we're talking about sweet potato. Sweet potato waffle fries. The best thing ever.
That sounds great.
Yes.
Do you guys fry things like, where was I? I was down in New Orleans, I guess, and they had fried dill pickles. I thought that was pretty strange.
Yes, yes. We
it's good, though.
Yes, we do fried pickles here, too. A lot of times they do like the small round ones. Some people do like the long ones, But I've seen them small and round. We do the fried pickles. And something else that I do, and this might sound weird, but this is what I do. I like to take my sweet potatoes, you know, wash them and scrub them and peel like the outside skin, and I slice them real thin like scalloped potatoes. And I take aluminum foil and I put like a layer of sweet potatoes. Then I will sprinkle cinnamon. I will put brown sugar. I will put butter. And I will, then I put another layer of sweet potatoes, and I do the same thing. I will put butter, brown cinnamon, and sugar, and stack them all on top of each other and close it and put it on the grill for about 20 minutes, and the air will start smelling like a sweet potato pie. When you pull that out, all the cinnamon and the brown sugar and the butter will begin to melt through the sweet potatoes, and it will be soft and rich and creamy. Oh, it's so delicious.
That sounds great.
I love sweet potatoes. So when you talk about sweet potatoes, I'm all about those.
Yeah. Well, I'll try that. Thanksgiving, that sounds like it'll be... So that sounds like a fall recipe, you know?
It really is. I do it all year round because, like I said, because where we are located, we have sweet potatoes all year round. So for me, that's my thing because I like to go outside and do the grill. And when you were talking about potatoes, I'm pretty sure you can do this with any white potato, and I've done it with red potatoes. It's similar where you do the white potatoes. Then on top of it, you put butter, and I like to put garlic. And I like to put butter, garlic, and any type of like seasoning, salt, or fresh vegetable, or fresh spices, and layer that up and wrap it and do the same thing. I chop onions in it too. Sometimes I chop garlic and onions in it. And now that right there is delicious also.
That sounds great. Hey, do you guys have the kudzu problem where you guys are? Where there's so much of that kudzu vine everywhere?
I don't even think I know what a kudzu is. I know that might sound weird.
So it's a fairly invasive plant that's taking over large parts of the country, and I think it's mostly in the South, so that's why I asked. I think there's people trying to figure out what the hell to do with it. Like, could you turn it into some sort of product?
does it grow on trees?
You know? It grows on everything. So when I think I was in Louisiana or Texas or something, I don't remember, but I was driving along and like this vine had grown up all the trees. So on the freeway, you're looking out the window and all you see is kudzu everywhere, right? So I don't know your area very well, but that's why I was asking.
You know what? Probably so. If it's that thing that kind of wraps around and just takes over trees, I've seen it before. Cause I didn't know that's what it was called. I just thought it's just a vine that just wraps around trees. I didn't realize they had a name for it. So yes, I have seen it before. And, yes, it is one of those things, almost like they said, like weeds. Once it attacks, it just stays. No matter what you do, it comes back. Wow.
There's one weed that grows so vibrantly here. I've had nightmares about it. Like I've been pulling it all day and then I'll go to sleep at night and all I see is that same damn weed, you know?
it's like even in my dreams, horrible. I can't even rest in peace.
Seriously, it takes over.
What is your favorite thing to drink?
Beer. I really like craft beers. And we're really lucky out here. We've got a lot of breweries, and one of them, I'll give them a little plug. They're called Barley Browns, and they win national prizes. And so that's probably my favorite right now. Probably Barley Browns Tumble Off Ale.
Ooh. That sounds delicious.
It is. It's a problem. It's an hour away, so I can't drive there and drink and then come back. I have to drive there, get a growler, bring it home, and then drink.
Between living in the big cities and where you are now, like, what is the biggest thing, like, you miss, like, when you talk about, like, the different foods and things, what's the biggest difference between the two places?
Well, living in New York, it's there's something to be said about being anonymous and just living your life and you're in touch with the world there in a way that here in this little town I'm not. I feel I love this place and I'm getting used to knowing everybody and the big skies are beautiful and you look out your window and it's gorgeous 24/7. But I liked the cultural aspects of just trying to figure out what to do in the evening and saying, okay, well, the museum is having an opening, or, you know, the bar down there is having a trivia night, or, you know, that just the connection with a lot more people. But then again, I'm 50 and it's like, I don't mind slowing down a bit.
That's understandable.
I was doing too much when I lived in the city. So it's okay. It's balanced, you know. And I have the internet, so I can be in touch with people.
You know what? I think that's one beautiful thing that I do like and enjoy about the internet. The internet makes the world a lot smaller. What would you say to anyone that goes to your website and they're brand new?
Well, I would say first sign up, then go to the advanced search feature and look for your town or look for your state and see if anyone from where you already are has already signed up. If not, and then if not, start a space for your town. So, for instance, you're in Charlotte, mm-hmm. there might or might not be. I'm not sure offhand. I should have looked before we talked. But
oh, no problem.
If there isn't a group for Charlotte, North Carolina, go and start one for Charlotte, North Carolina, and mail an invitation out to friends of yours that might be interested in starting up in their neighborhood. Those would be the first things I'd do.
Okay, cool. This has been a fun ride. I have learned a lot, y'all. I hope y'all
it's been great talking.
Have learned a whole lot too. And before we go, go ahead and give all your Twitter and your Facebook and any contact information.
Okay, so I'm on Twitter at hyperlocavore, HyperLocavore. And then the website is hyperlocavore.com. And the website's free. You know, you don't need to pay or anything to sign up. And let's see. My Twitter account is kind of all over the place. I tweet about all kinds of stuff. You know, I'm a Scandal fan, so you'll see me tweeting about Scandal or
whatever. Oh, yeah. We got a lot of Scandal fans, too, so you're not alone.
Yeah. So, you know, I like this communal TV watching experience we're having on Twitter now, you know, because it's like I just love having that conversation while the show's going on. You know, it's just great. And the site itself. And like I said, it's free. So come on by. And if you have any trouble with the site or if you have any questions, just tweet at me or mail me on the site. I'm Liz M on the site. And just Twitter is also a real easy way to get a hold of me.
Yes, and before we go, when you were talking about the live TV watch, because I tweet a lot about a lot of live TV, and what I've realized, no matter what you watch, somebody else is watching it. You use the hashtag, you will find,
right.
I don't care how old the show is, how minute the show is, I don't care if it's only in your area. Somebody else out there is going, hey, I watched that too. And that's one thing I really do love about it. Like I said, it makes the big world small. And when you
talk about
your garden space, it does. It makes the big world small because now we could take everything that we have. We could kind of use our own things that we've grown and exchange and things like that. So I want to thank you for introducing this marvelous thing to our audience. I want to thank you for taking your time out to spend time with me. This has been a very, very, very fun interview. And guys, go check her out. Go hit her up. Let her know that you found about her through us. If you decide to start your own food growing space type of thing, please do. Even if it's something like me, which I probably need to motivate myself, even if you go, I've grown a spice today, that's more than I was doing before, so I've accomplished something. So I want to tell you thank you again. And for those of you out there in the Black Guy Who Tips land, we want to tell everybody thank you for another episode of Flip Smacking Good. Thank you very much, Liz. And for those of you out there, have a good night.